I'm Owen Bennett-Jones in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection. A radical champion of the dispossessed, or a power-hungry populist determined to hang on to power by fair means or foul, Venezuela's president Hugo Chavez provokes strong opinions, and not just about his singing. And yesterday, the people of Venezuela had a chance to express their views in a nationwide referendum on his leadership. Now, the early results suggest that more Venezuelans are for Chavez than against him. Election officials say that with 94% of the votes counted, he won 58%. Well, Venezuela is the world's fifth largest oil exporter. Over 10% of US oil imports come from Venezuela, and looked at the other way around, two-thirds of all Venezuela's oil exports go to the US. So on the face of it, there should be a close, stable bilateral relationship between Washington and Caracas. But in reality, Hugo Chavez regularly denounces the US as a tyrannous empire and champions instead his Bolivarian Revolution, named after the 19th century hero of South American anti-colonialism, Simon Bolivar. Well, for the next hour, we're going to be discussing the news from Venezuela, and if you want to join us, do so. Do you see Hugo Chavez as a despotic autocrat or a champion of the poor? And what will his continued presidency, if that indeed happens now, mean for Venezuela and the stability of the region? Well, the number to call is 1-800-423-8255. Join in the conversation. It's 1-800-423-TALK. And first of all, let's go straight to Caracas and get the latest news on the results, the polls, the arguments that are now raging. Juan Ferrero writes for the New York Times from Caracas. Now then, is Juan, this 58% figure, is that the latest you've got?
That's the latest we've got. There haven't been any announcements since about 4 a.m. About the results. We knew that it was 92-94% of the votes counted, and it was 58-42%. In essence, what they're talking about is almost 5 million votes for Chavez and about 3.6 million for the opposition.
And that would mean he can't lose, right?
Well, that would mean that he has an insurmountable lead, correct. But the big question is, was there fraud? The opposition is claiming that there is massive fraud. The government says that, of course, there is no fraud. And the final word really rests with the Organization of American States and the Carter Center in Atlanta. They haven't pronounced themselves on the vote and whether it was free and fair and transparent.
But do you think the opposition would accept the verdict of the monitors?
I think they would have to. I think that the monitors, both sides agreed to these monitors. Both sides know that these monitors run quick counts in which they take samples from various polling sites around the country. They're highly accurate. They do this all across Latin America. And what we're waiting for is for them to tell us what they came up with. And I think that that the two sides would have to accept whatever the OAS and the Carter Center say.
I read a suggestion that some monitors didn't actually turn up in Venezuela because they thought the conditions imposed upon them by the government were too restrictive.
Well, the EU was going to send monitors, and they did not. That's correct. But having said that, the key monitors were the OAS and the Carter Center. There were some restrictions on them, but they were not quite as broad as had initially been believed. I mean, they had not been as broad as what we had thought initially. The government clearly, and some people within the Electoral Council here, the five-member Electoral Board, had talked about tighter restrictions on these groups. But in the end, they let them have a fairly open process here. So we're going to see what these two groups say.
Tell us about the timings now. When do we get the final result, and when do we get the monitor's verdict?
We don't know. The monitors have not commented all day. We're expecting something perhaps later this morning, and I think at some point during the day the final results will be in for the electoral board. But they have not outlined when that might be.
And a final practical matter, if you like. If this is confirmed and the opposition do effectively accept it, then Hugo Chavez rules right through to 2007, right?
Exactly. The next election would be at 2006, and this term ends at the start of 2007. And Chavez has said in the past that he would rule until 2021. Who knows? But obviously, if the OAS says that this was on the up and up, this strengthens the government's hold, President Chavez's hold on this government and on this country, and I think it weakens the opposition substantially. They're going to have to just simply try to focus on the 2006 elections.
Juan Ferrero, thanks very much for bringing us up to date from Caracas. And we're joined now also from there by Edgardo Landa. Now, he's a professor of politics and trade at the Central University in Venezuela. Well, tell us, first of all, what do you make of this 58% figure? Do you believe it?
I certainly do believe it. I certainly do believe it because it agrees with all the main public opinion polls that were carried out before the elections. There were something like 10 major opinion polls carried out, and they all consistently showed differences that went from 6% to something like 20-something percent in favor of Chavez, so it's not unexpected. The level of organization and mobilization by the Chavez forces, especially by the popular sectors in all the country, led me to predict that the victory would be for Chavez, and not only a victory for Chavez, but an overwhelming victory, and 58-42 is certainly an overwhelming victory.
And a lot of people voted, didn't they?
An amazing amount of people voted, yeah. It's the increase in voting is really amazing. I mean, the people, participation increased by something like 50%, and that's really amazing.
But by 50%?
Yeah, something like that, 50, yeah.
The question is... Yeah, you're not precise, but yeah, in general terms. I mean, but the question is, will the opposition accept this result? Because reading the quotes from opposition leaders that are coming out of Caracas now, they clearly don't believe it.
Well, the thing is that the opposition is not willing to believe anything that is not in their favor. Let me say a couple of things. First, this is an opposition that's dominated by really anti-democratic leadership. This is the same opposition that led the coup against Chavez in 2002. This is the same opposition that participated directly in the direction of the oil strike in 2002, 2003 to try to get rid of Chavez. And this is the same opposition that's simply not willing to accept the results of the Electoral Council. I would like to state that Venezuela is a sovereign country. Venezuela has a national electoral authority. The final arbiter on the results of the elections are not the Organization of American States or the Carter Center. They have a right to have an opinion, but they're not the final arbiters. They can monitor the system, but the decision is an autonomous decision taken by the constitutionally defined authority of the National Electoral Council. U.S. decisions, U.S. elections are not decided by some extraterritorial authority. They're decided by the internal decisions of the U.S. political system. Even when it's a fraud internal to the United States, as in the case of the Bush elections.
Yeah, but what about Hugo Chavez's credentials in this respect? Because you say the opposition won't accept a democratic verdict, and yet, you know, Hugo Chavez himself tried to run a coup 12 years ago, didn't he? So his own credentials are not exactly impeccable.
First, this was a long time ago. When he participated in a coup, he was put into prison. He stayed for a long time in prison. He then participated in three democratic elections, and he has won a record 7 consecutive elections in Venezuela, counting elections and referenda, over the last years, from 1998 to the present referendum. 7 different elections in which he has overwhelmingly won, and the opposition still refuses to recognize that the majority of the Venezuelan population, which are the popular sectors of the Venezuelan population, are in agreement with the Chavez government. And there's no way the opposition is going to accept that they are a minority. They are a big minority. I mean, 42% is a very significant chunk of Venezuelan population, but still a minority.
Okay.
Thanks
very much for joining us. I want to move on, but thank you very much for coming through on the line from Caracas there. That was Edgardo Landa. And I'm joined now, and we just want to introduce them before we go to the break. Daniel Hellinger, who joins us from KWMU in St. Louis, Missouri. He's a professor of political science at Webster University, and he's written a couple of books on Venezuela, and in fact is just back from Caracas. And Miguel Diaz joins us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Now, he's the director of the South American Project at the Center of Strategic and International Studies and used to be the senior Latin America economist and strategist for Nico Securities. Miguel Diaz, first of all, from what we've heard, democracy remains a pretty fragile commodity in Venezuela.
I agree. Let me just defer with everything that the previous speaker just said. I'm very concerned. I've been very concerned about the mechanics of the referendum process. When I went to bed last night and talked to some of my contacts in Venezuela, mostly international newspaper reporters, I was under the impression that the opposition had more than sufficient votes to have ousted Chavez. They were talking in the 55-60% range. And when I wake up this morning, I gathered that the Chavez supposedly won the referendum with the same numbers. I don't think the CNE, the National Elections Authorities, are balanced. I think they've shown themselves to be very pro-government. I do think the OAS and the Carter Center have a big challenge before them in making the right call as to what happened. I think they need to be very careful because whatever they do say today could very well unleash a wave of violence in Venezuela that nobody really wants to see.
Daniel Hellinger, do you agree with that assessment? To be honest, I mean, I was reading quite a few of the reports over the last week coming from correspondents in Caracas, and they all seemed to say that there was a late swing to Chavez, and they were predicting a victory for him.
Right. Now, I'm much closer to Edgardo Lander's point of view on this. I think the electoral board actually, I'll agree with Miguel this much. I mean, the electoral board is 3-2 in terms of Chavez supporters versus anti-Chavez folks. However, the chair of the electoral board was approved by the opposition. He was chosen because, after all, the Chavez government was at the time in power. And so but the person chosen was somebody who was respected as a fair jurist. So and all the polls, and I was in Venezuela last week and I looked at a number of them, were pointing in this direction. And if you got the feeling on the street or just walked around, you certainly got the notion that there was a lot of momentum with Chavez.
Do you think, Daniel Hellinger, there is a risk of violence now?
Well, there's some risk, but I think it's important to remember that that although there has been some violence in Venezuela, it's been remarkable that as polarized as the country is over the last 3 or 4 years, that there hasn't been even more violence. I think the most serious risk of violence is in areas of the country where what's at stake is control over something like land or property. That's where you have the potential for the greatest amount of violence. At the moment, I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. I looked at the web pages of the two leading newspapers who have been very closely aligned with the opposition, and their front pages are relatively balanced, which even though most of the opposition leaders are coming out against this, I was encouraged in the sense that the leading newspapers are not jumping in on the side of the opposition, but seem to be playing wait and see.
Daniel Hellinger, thanks for the moment. And also, Miguel Diaz, stay with us. We'll be coming back to you. And if you've got a view on this, do let us know what you think. The numbers are 1-800-423-8255. I'm Owen Bennett-Jones. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Owen Bennett-Jones, in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. We're talking about democracy and the political survival of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. And my guests are Daniel Hellinger and Miguel Diaz. The number to call if you want to join our conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a call now from Raphael in Newton, Massachusetts. Raphael, what's your point?
Yeah, my point is that, look, I don't consider myself Chavista or the opposition, but what I want to say is that for the first time in Venezuela, we have real elections. Because in the past, Venezuela never lived in democracy. Democracy was only for the well-off. Democracy was always for the well-to-do and the connected ones. So that's why thousands of people like us have to leave. because we didn't have any future there. Because if your last name wasn't the right last name, there was nothing for you there. So not even to get an education. So we left. I left 22 years ago, and I made my life in a foreign land that has treated me better than my own country just because I wasn't from the well-to-do.
So are you going to go back?
No, I'll never go back. I have my kids here, I have my family here, and I think it's been too long. But what I'll tell you is that let's not be naive. We never had a real elections in Venezuela. I think these are the real ones when the nobody were allowed to express their point of view, and if they chose Chavez, let's be it. But what my point is that this is the direct response, the direct product of neglecting the poor, neglecting the masses, and abusing them. Now we got someone that might not be 100% honest and might not be the best guy, but guess what? His lies are much better told than the other people.
Okay. Thanks very much, Rafael. And let me bring in now Ricardo Hausmann, who's a professor of the practice of economic development at Harvard's Kennedy Center for International Development. And he's actually in Caracas at the moment and is a supporter of the opposition. What do you make of what you just heard there, Ricardo, that, you know, you may not like him, but this is a vote and basically it has to be accepted?
Well, let me first react a little bit to the previous caller, which was quite interesting because, I don't have a common last name. My parents are immigrants. They didn't go to high school. I'm the first generation to go to university, and I'm a professor at Harvard, so I'm a Venezuelan. So I don't have that experience of belonging to a country that doesn't offer any opportunities to people who are outside the ruling clique.
But you're a professor in America, not in Venezuela.
Sorry?
You're a professor at Harvard in America, not in Venezuela.
I'm a professor at Harvard, yeah, but, I had a distinguished career in Venezuela, but my parents had... I'm a Venezuelan. I grew up in Venezuela. I went to school in Venezuela. My parents had no education, and now I'm a professor at Harvard, which means that, if you are... the game was pretty open. Secondly, I want to say that Venezuela between 1958 and 1998 had 9 presidential elections, 7 of which were won by opposition parties. And the opposition and the government gave up power and there was a peaceful transition. So this idea that the system was sort of like rigged and closed and so on, it's just not true. If you read all the literature, even the academic literature on Venezuelan politics, you'll find that it was a system of very large mass parties with a lot of public participation in elections. So this story of that the previous caller was telling about Venezuela just does not fit the facts. Now, I think that I don't know what the result of the vote was. We want to know the main reasons why people distrust the result is number one, that the Electoral Council was extremely contentious. This decision is a 3-2 decision of the Electoral Council. It's a new system of voting. It has never been used before. I personally was in line in over 90-degree temperature in the sun for 9 hours trying to vote. It was a new system that was very. It was a very simple thing because it was yes, no. There were not many candidates, just yes, no. It was the slowest election ever. These guys imposed a new system without a consensus within the Electoral Council.
Ricardo, let me just ask you to look ahead.
But 1 second.
Okay.
The second element is that there are several exit polls, and there's one exit poll that I've looked in detail that had 20,000 people. And in that exit poll, the opposition was winning by 20 points. So we have the exit poll, and then we have the totalization that the Electoral Council has. Now, how to square these two things? Well, in each table, in each voting booth, there is a document that is generated that is signed by both sides, and these things have to be added up. And this was the first time we used a new type of electronic voting. There has to be an auditing process of the machines. to see if the machine, if what the machines added up is what they totaled at the center, and so on. And these things have not been done.
All right, Ricardo, let me just ask you to give you have an insight into how the opposition thinks and what they'll be thinking this morning. Do you think they will accept this result peacefully, or do you think there's a risk that there will be violence now?
Venezuela has shown that it has no appetite for violence, and there was no violence yesterday. I think the opposition is a democratic opposition with a long history of democracy. I don't think that the risk of violence is high. But you have to understand the reason why the distrust. Public opinion surveys say that the trust in the Electoral Council is running at 26%. So that means that people have decided to have Carter and the OAS become the arbiter because they don't trust the Electoral Council. So we have to wait to see what they say, how they say it, what's their grounds for a decision. And I think that people will accept if they believe that this is what actually happened. But that's not people's sensation of what's happened. And that's why people are willing to believe the results.
Okay, Ricardo Hausmann, thank you very much for joining us and still with us and listening to all of that. Daniel Hellinger, yes. Professor of Political Science at Webster University, and Miguel Diaz, who's in our NPR studios in Washington from the CSIS. Miguel Diaz, what do you make of what you just heard there?
Well, I have a lot of misgivings about the process. The European Union decided not to participate as observers because they were concerned about the limitations that the government had offered on their maneuvering of their monitoring of the referendum. I agree with Ricardo that the CNE is politically biased. I am more concerned about the prospect of violence. You're talking about a people who are concerned that Chavez is taking the country in the direction of another Cuba. They feel that whatever democracy is left is being threatened by somebody whose commitments to democratic practice is questionable, at least. So I think within the ranks of the opposition, I think the bulk of the opposition is committed to democratic order. But there is a minority within the opposition who might be compelled to take arms. And, this is a part of the world that, as you know, has seen much violence, much armed violence in the past. Yes, next door in Colombia, we've had 30, 40 years of violence. So it's not beyond the realm of the possible to see an outbreak of violence in Venezuela.
Daniel Hellinger, it looks like Hugo Chavez will be around now until 2007, January, when the term runs out. Tell us a bit about the man as you see him. I mean, he's been described as a modern-day Fidel Castro. Is that right?
Oh, it's right and wrong. I mean, there's elements. He's certainly charismatic. He certainly is not above occasionally using demagoguery. And in a lot of ways, clearly, he has relied upon Fidel Castro for both very strategic alliances when it comes to bringing teachers, doctors into the country, and also supplying oil to Cuba at very favorable terms. So they're allies in that respect. On the other hand, it's very different. Venezuela is a different kind of country. You're not going to Cubanize Venezuela. One of the things I was extraordinarily impressed with last week in my visit to Caracas was the degree to which on both sides, see and know, citizens, ordinary citizens, were preparing to monitor their own elections. We're spending all our time talking about the Carter Center and the OAS or the EU, why they weren't there. I think it's extraordinary. Both sides were passing out literature telling ordinary citizens what to do to make sure they're registered, what to do to make sure they could get to their polling place, what to do, what to look for to make sure the other side wasn't committing fraud. I think this era between 1958 and 1998 was in many ways democratic. There was a tremendous amount of fraud committed during the 1990s that can't be overlooked. And a lot of the opposition, particularly the Action Democratic opposition, participated in that. Chavez took advantage of this. He took advantage of the fact that people had lacked confidence in the system, that they felt that increasingly the system was moving further and further away from the popular will, and increasingly they were beginning to feel as though the oil, which was, of course, the whole basis, the export of oil, the basis of the economy, was being used increasingly to enrich a small handful of people at the top of the social pyramid. So Chavez has taken advantage of this. I get very concerned when I hear Chavez talk about he wants to stay in power till 2021. I get get concerned when he uses extreme language and he unnecessarily polarizes more moderate forces. On the other hand, he's somebody who really has delivered, who really has used the oil in many ways to bring social programs that are needed into the barrios, into the poor parts of the country. So many people feel that he is the first president that's really delivered on those kinds of promises. And to a certain extent, that has to be thought of as part of what democracy is about, delivering on your promises.
Let me just pick up on that point and put it to one of our callers, Madeline from Amherst, Massachusetts. What do you think of that, that oil used to be given to the few and the revenues are now being distributed to the many?
Well, I have family who live in Venezuela, and that's not their perspective. As a matter of fact, the sensation is that there's increasing poverty in Venezuela, and according to my friends who I know who are in the working class, their sense is that their lot hasn't improved at all. Now, it could be that the people who are living in the ranchitos, which are the hovels on the mountainside, that there have been some social programs that have been given to them. And I appreciate the objectivity of the last guest. However, I don't think we can underestimate the extreme harm that's being done to the Venezuelan economy. And I also just wanted to say that I agree with one of the first callers who said that he never felt he got a fair shake in Venezuela and had to come to the United States. And I agree with his outlook that because of sins committed in the past, this is what Venezuela deserves, is a person who had to come in order to center the political apparatus so that it reflects the will of the majority. However, I don't think that justifies having a person who has done as much damage as he has to Venezuela.
Thank you, Madeline. Let me just put this point to Miguel Diaz. There are two sort of contradictory trends from what I can see going on, because we just heard there the economy is in trouble and unemployment has gone up, has it not, under Chavez, even though there have been these social programs funded by the high oil prices to try and redress some of the problems that causes.
That's right. There's been an unprecedented rise in oil prices, as you know, over the last few years. Still, the level of poverty in Venezuela has risen dramatically since Chavez took over, from about 45% to close to 70%. I've spent some time in some of these poor communities as well, and I remember one conversation I had with this older lady, obviously poor. And she told me, you know, that, you know, she appreciates the handouts and the basket of goodies that sometimes the government provides, but jobs are not available. And two, the level of crime in Venezuela is unprecedented as well. It's become one of the most dangerous countries in all of South America. Let me also comment on Daniel's comments about the referendum. Yes. It's good for a democracy to allow for campaigning, to allow for press freedoms, but if the counting of the votes is not credible and it's managed by an authority whose reputation for balance is really couldn't be any worse. It speaks poorly of Venezuela's democracy. You're right. Chavez has allowed for campaigns, has allowed for a referendum, but I do believe that he has resorted finally to fraud in order to survive this referendum.
Another caller now, Alba from Somerville, Massachusetts. What's your point?
Well, I just want to agree with a previous caller that has said that, unfortunately, the Venezuelan populace has gotten an unfair shake, particularly those of us who are from, poorer backgrounds. But I think Venezuelans also need to ask more of their politicians. However, I want to also say that somebody who had staged a coup because he thinks he should stay in power is not a true democratic leader. And, he who stages a coup or vaguely caters to the poor, is not really somebody who's actually catering to them. I am not from a rich background, but that does not mean that this guy's actually, really doing something for me.
Do you have family still in Venezuela?
I did have some, but everybody has actually left precisely because there were very few opportunities for them. But this guy has actually scared me in the way he seems to think that he has to hold power, and holding power is paramount, and no matter how much he speaks of Simón Bolívar, it really, you know, he can speak of Simón Bolívar, but clutching power is not democracy.
Albert, thank you. And
can I respond?
Yeah, that's Daniel, is it?
Yes, it is. There's a couple things. First of all, I have to say that I think the Electoral Council deserves a lot more respect than it's getting from a lot of the comments here. You realize that it was that inclined, I'm going to put it that way, towards Chavez because, as I say, the tie-breaking vote was a Chavista who nonetheless was respected for honesty and independence. And, you know, when the whole business about the petitions, there were plenty of grounds in which the Electoral Council could have thrown out the petitions because they were disputed on both sides, whether they were valid or not. I'm referring to the petitions that bring about the referendum in the first place. In the end, they went ahead and they held the election. I also think that you have to understand in terms of the economic situation that while Chavez probably deserves some of the blame for some of the problems in the economy, at the same time, this is a country that has been through a short-lived coup attempt and has been through a devastating general strike that, you know, targeted the oil industry in particular. And in a lot of respects, we have yet to see what the long-term impact of the investments in I'm going to call it social infrastructure, are going to be. So before we sort of, just assume that everybody thinks the Electoral Council is a fraud, I don't think we ought to assume that. And just one more thing regarding exit polls. I'm not sure which polls Miguel is referring to, but the main opposition poll is being gathered by an organization called Sumate, which has received heavy funding from the National Endowment for Democracy. I don't know how good those exit polls are. It'd be interesting to see what the Carter Center and the OAS comes up with. But in a lot of respects, I think that Sumate and the opposition is very well based, of course, in the areas that are most opposed to Chavez. So I really don't trust exit polls that are put out by Sumate or by opposition politicians.
Daniel Hellinger, thanks. Miguel Diaz, thanks too. Stay with us. We'll be coming back to you. President Hugo Chavez apparently has won a new mandate. That's what we're talking about. If you've got a view, do call us 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You're listening to The Connection on NPR. I'm Owen Bennett-Jones in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection, and we're talking about Venezuela, the vote there, and President Hugo Chavez. My guests are Daniel Hellinger and Miguel Diaz, and the number to join the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. I just want to move this on a little, if I can, gentlemen, to ask about the implications for the relationship between Venezuela and the United States. The US gets more than 10% of its oil from Venezuela, and seen the other way around, Venezuela sells most of its oil to the US. But at the same time, Chavez has made some pretty strong statements about the US. Just take this for a quote. The US ruling elite wants to be like that secret agent, 007 James Bond, who can kill anyone, anytime, anywhere, and without answering to anyone. Miguel Diaz, how do you see the relationship between Washington and Caracas now?
Well, it's obviously deteriorated over the last few years. I don't think the relations with Venezuela would be able to go back to what it was prior to Chavez, with Chavez at the helm. I think now with this gray cloud surrounding the referendum, I think now the U.S. has, I guess, more reason to keep this guy at a distance. Chavez has been playing the anti-American card for a long time. He did so during the referendum, and I think part of his political project is to position himself as this anti-Yankee pole in South America and in the world. So I don't see him also going out of his way to rebuild the relations with the U.S. If I could just comment on Daniel's remarks about the competency and the fairness of the CNE, I think you have good reason to question both of these bona fides. The fact that the referendum took 9 hours, I mean, that it took voters 9 hours to vote, I think reflects on the competency of the CNE. The fact that the reparo process was as convoluted and as retarded as it was also reflects on the competency and fairness of the CNE. The fact that the Europeans, who I gather have no horses in this race, decided not to take them up on their offer to participate as monitors also leads me to believe that there is good reason to question their ability to do a fair job.
Okay, Miguel, I'll tell you what. I mean, we have discussed that quite a lot.
Sure.
And in a way, we're waiting for the monitors to deliver their verdict,
right,
which should happen in the next few hours, and probably all be in a better position to make an assessment on what went on when that
That's
happened.
Right.
So let's just focus in, Daniel, if I can, on this question of what's going to happen to the relationship between the U.S. Isn't the crucial point really that for all the talk, angry talk on both sides, particularly perhaps from the Venezuelan side, the two countries still do business in quite a satisfactory way?
Well, in fact, oil prices have come down slightly with the news that Chavez won the election. I mean, this is just hard-headed business that they realize that had the yes side won and Chavez been recalled, there would have been probably even more instability. Now, that's not necessarily a reason to keep Chavez in power if he deserved to be recalled, but it's a fact about the nature of the oil markets. I think the real contentious point between the Chavez government and the United States is going to come over Latin American integration in general. I don't think oil itself is going to be an issue. I think the oil companies themselves realize that even with a higher royalty rate that they're going to be able to do business in Venezuela, especially with oil prices as high as they are. And also, I believe, and I've talked to people within the oil industry and in the oil company, and I think that there is, if there's a disposition on the side of the consuming country, a real interest in Venezuela in stabilizing oil prices and the business relationship with the United States and other consuming countries. Where I think things will get very interesting is as the Chavez administration pursues its view of a Latin American integration that is distinct from the kind of economic integration that the United States is promoting with the free trade area of the Americas. That's where I think there's going to be some serious contentiousness.
Daniel, you say that you've spoken to a lot of people in the oil industry. Can I just ask you this question, if I can ask for quite a quick answer on it? The Chavez dismissed 18,000 managers in the oil company who were on that general strike against him. And I must admit, at the time, I presumed that the whole thing would fall apart. I mean, that's a huge number of people, and yet it still seems to function. How can that be?
Well, it can be because, you know, like any other industry, people day to day know what their jobs are. And so you're able to do it in part because you're able to rely upon people who know what's going on. Secretaries in offices, believe it or not, often know what their bosses are doing. Now, can they in the long run an industry? You know, you might question whether they're qualified to do that. But on a day-to-day basis, it's not that hard. Running the extractive part of an oil industry is nowhere near as difficult as exploration and some of the other elements of it. The real bottleneck also is not so much on the production of crude, it was on moving the crude to port and to refineries. And once they solved that problem, they were able to bring things back online relatively quickly.
Laura from Staunton, Massachusetts, tell us what's your view?
Well, in the last year since Chavez has been in power, my husband's family is Venezuelan, and I have to say that their situation has only gotten worse. They weren't a member of the wealthy upper class to begin with. They were lower middle class, working class, and my husband and I left Venezuela in 2001 because he couldn't find work and I didn't feel safe anymore under Chavez with his anti-American statements and just statements against Americans. Since then, both my husband's brothers signed the first petition to have the recall, and since signing, they haven't been able to find work. Basically, the feeling is the only people who can get work are the Chavistas, and if you're supporting Chavez, then you have a job, and if you're not, then you don't.
No work and high crime. But on the other side, isn't there progress on things like education? I was reading that 3 million more children are being educated now compared to when Chavez came in. If I could just ask Laura to comment on that.
Sure.
Yeah, honestly, I don't know a lot about the literacy program that's been... I have to say that under the old system, all of my husband's family and cousins went to university and went much cheaper than they would ever be able to go here. They were given transportation, and the system was really good.
And that's gone now?
I honestly don't know exactly how the universities are working or how anything's working right now as far as that goes. As far as education, My feeling on Chavez's social programs is that he's kind of dispersing gifts out to the shanty towns, and, you know, there is some help being on. He's throwing Band-Aids around, but it doesn't seem like much is getting better. I know that poverty has increased tenfold since Chavez has come in.
Miguel Diaz, let me pick that up with you, because it's quite tricky, this. If Chavez gives out the oil revenues, he's accused of trying to buy votes, but maybe he's just implementing his policy. I mean, that's what he said he'd do, isn't it?
Well, he's been generous, but it doesn't have an economic logic. It's had a political logic. He spent a lot of money in public relations. He spent a lot of money on providing some of these quote-unquote social services to the poor. But I think it's come at with strings attached, and a lot of these poor, I guess, were somewhat compelled to vote for Chavez. I gathered also that a lot of non-Venezuelans were registered speedily over the last couple of months, and I suspect a lot of them felt indebted to Chavez and voted for him as well. Not necessarily a bad thing. But the point that the last caller made is a correct point. It's one thing to be a populist and spend your oil windfall on all these initiatives, but it hasn't amounted to a coherent job-creating economic strategy.
Jerry from Pittsburgh, North Carolina.
Hi. I think it's worth looking at history on some of the things getting worse situations in Iraq. Like, there were 13 years of making things worse so that when the U.S. went in, things would begin to seem better, even if the U.S. ended up controlling the oil. But what I really had called about is the question of democracy. One of the really remarkable details about life in Venezuela from the people that I've heard from is that there is this little book that has been widely distributed that's a tiny little pocket-sized copy of the Constitution. And the literacy programs that are going forward have focused on helping people read that document. That does not sound to me like a demagogue or an anti-democratic leadership if you are empowering the public to be able to speak up for themselves and for the public good when elections come along.
Jerry, thank you. Daniel Hellinger, I'm getting the impression
yes.
that people just can't agree about this. I mean, the facts are out there, presumably, but people do have very, very different perspectives on this man and what he's doing.
Well, of course so. And of course, in Venezuela, you might be getting more pro-Chavez calls if you believe the result of the referendum. And in this country, because a lot of people have left, perhaps with good reason, you're much more likely to get people with experience in Venezuela whose experience is negative. I want to comment, if I could, briefly on economic matters. I don't think that Chavez has yet put forward a coherent plan for the future, but he's not exactly it's not as though he's just been giving money away either. I mean, he's paid down the international debt. Despite now he has borrowed more internally, but he has paid down the international debt. Also, there's something like 100,000 cooperatives that have been formed in this country in the last 3 years, in a country that almost had no cooperatives earlier. So, and then on top of that, you've got to understand that things like literacy and health are investments in people that can pay off down the road. So, I'm yet to see. I'm going to take out a middle position here. I don't think, on the one hand, that I've seen anything that convinces me that Chavez or Venezuelans have given up clientelism. I think there's remains corruption, just as there was corruption, perhaps even more serious before 1998. But on the other hand, I think it's a mistake to think that he's just sort of giving money away and that none of this is having positive economic benefits in the country.
Leo from Boston, what's your take?
Yes, hello. I'm happy to see that there are some callers supporting the Chavez, because most of the time what I hear from here from Boston is the Venezuelans who are living here are complaining that they have to flee the Venezuela because of the critical condition of Chavez. And I have to remind that the vast majority of the people in Venezuela are poor people, and they don't have even the dream to fly into the United States. So that's why they're supporting Chavez, and Chavez is doing a lot of things, of positive things for the people. And then I see the haters of oppositors of Chavez that are trying to get back the backing of the United States, and they come with stories like Chavez is supporting Osama bin Laden, or Chavez is a big friend of Hussein, and they're just willing to even have the Marines walking into Venezuela just to get rid of Chavez. You know, so it had no sense at all, most of the arguments of the opposition. And they keep comparing Venezuela with Cuba to, for the same reason, to have it back of the international, especially the United States. Well, in Cuba, we don't have five TV channels from the opposition. In Cuba, we don't have opposition. In Cuba, there is no referendum. In Cuba, there is no election. So, yes, Chavez is a friend with Fidel. And what? Canada, as well, is friend with Fidel, with Cuba, and help Cuba. So, yeah, well, you know, Chavez shares some positions with Fidel about social programs, but nothing else. We have it's totally democratic government, and it shows yesterday what he just won again. So this is the eighth time he's winning a democratic election.
Leo, thank you. Let me just put that point to Miguel Diaz. What kind of government is this? Just to put it in context for us, if, for example, Hugo Chavez faces, you know, a writer or a journalist or some such thing who's strongly opposed to him, does that person end up in jail?
Well, let me first start with Cuba. Cuba does have elections.
Venezuela.
Cuba does have elections. Unfortunately, the government always wins with 99% of the vote because the government does the counting and the environment for the elections are never fair. That's what we're seeing in Venezuela. The country has become more of a police state. There have been people on the part of the opposition who have been imprisoned, some of them who've been tortured, and have testified about it in the U.S. Congress. A lot of that has taken place before. It's not a first. But to say that none of that kind of oppressive tactics on the part of the government is not happening is just not true. Venezuela's democracy has been in trouble for a long time. By the way, it's not just Venezuela's democracy, but many of the democracies in the region are in trouble. There is this populist streak in the region, which I find very worrisome, and it's anti-democratic. I happen to believe that you could have economic growth and opportunity for the poor and the rest of the population under a democratic regime. I suspect that Chavez's political project is ultimately an undemocratic project, and I think the trend in a very negative direction is very real. And if this referendum is allowed to survive or to pass the way if it's allowed to be validated and it's not merited, I think we're in for a lot of trouble in Venezuela.
Miguel, thank you very much. And thanks also to Daniel Hellinger, Professor of Political Science at Webster University. Miguel Diaz is from the Center of Strategic and International Studies. Also thanks to people we heard from earlier, Ricardo Hausmann from the Harvard Kennedy School, and earlier, Edgardo Landa and Juan Ferrero from the New York Times in Venezuela. The Connection's produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Feneloza, Orit Karitsky-Fox, Jen Mattson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugars. Tara Murphy is our senior producer. And that's it. I'm Owen Bennett-Jones. This is The Connection.